This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. Thanks for listening. Not long ago, Mary Willingham, who is a researcher at the University of North Carolina, decided to do some research into how well football players do when it comes to academics, and particularly, how well do they read? The university paid for her research there, but they were not happy when she came back with some shocking results. 8 to 10% of the students that she worked with read at a third grade level or below. Now remember, we're talking about 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old men who can't read as well as some 8-year-old boys and girls in this country. Did the university see that shocking result and say, well, we've got to do better for our student athletes? Or did they say, let's turn this back on the researcher? Most of the community turned it back on the researcher, and Mary Willingham actually got death threats from people who were Tar Heel fans who thought that she was scuffing up the school's reputation and the team's reputation. Here to talk about this and what can be done about literacy levels and other academic problems of these college athletes is Dr. Rebecca Schumann, who's an education columnist for Slate and an adjunct professor at the University of Missouri at St. Louis. Rebecca, welcome to America Weekend.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Were you surprised by the results that she found?
I was a little bit surprised because I've had many, many student athletes in my courses over the years. And though there have been definitely some issues with them not being as academically oriented as some of their peers, I never had anybody who read at below, I would say, at maybe a 10th or 9th grade level, which I hate to say is fairly common in your average college freshman today.
So I
actually was very shocked.
So while 3rd grade is extreme, you find kids who are still 4 or 5 grade levels behind where they should be once they get into college and sit in your classroom.
Absolutely, whether they're athletes or not.
What's the root cause here?
I mean, I don't really like to point fingers at something that I can't change, but I would say that the K-12 system in America is currently failing our children.
Do you think it also comes down to...
I don't think that's a controversial opinion.
Well, do you think it also comes down a little bit to the way athletes are treated, particularly star athletes that get passed on because, hey, it's important that we have this kid on the team, don't give him an F and keep him in this grade?
Mm-hmm. And I think that that happens actually with non-athletes as well, but it isn't as newsworthy, so we don't really see it. I think a lot of kids are socially promoted. They're promoted because they have a behavioral problem and the teacher doesn't want to deal with them anymore. It's just, you know, our schools now have way too many kids per class. A lot of kids have special learning needs. There isn't that much to help them with. The resources are lacking. And so especially when they have a gift doing something else, and a teacher sees, like, that kid can go far. That kid could probably make the NFL or the NBA. They don't want to do anything. To them, it's harming that kid's future if they actually point out that kid's academic problems.
It seems to me that we're perhaps harming their short-term future, but failing them in the long-term.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I've worked with so many student athletes in my years as a professor, and all of them tell me very earnestly they realize that they're one injury away from never being able to play again, and that they really truly want a fallback. They want an education, but with their practice schedules, it's just often not that feasible. Their practice schedules are truly grueling.
Is it possible in a country, particularly one as football crazed at the college level as we are, is it possible to change this?
Well, I mean, I did make a modest proposal, although since I used the words modest and proposal, I was being a slight bit tongue-in-cheek. But yes, I think that there can be something changed at the institutional level, and it isn't even that difficult. It's just going to cost money. Currently, the resource programs to tutor student athletes involve hiring... Usually they involve making these very, very high-end facilities to tutor the student athletes, such as the Cube at the University of Oregon, my hometown, which is the most expensive building in the entire county. However, it is staffed by undergraduate tutors who are being paid, you know, an hourly wage that isn't that much higher than minimum wage. And what I'm wondering is why aren't well-qualified literacy specialists with a master's or a doctorate in literacy pedagogy and literary studies working with these students? That's my question, is why aren't a higher level of professional that's more qualified working with them, since there are thousands of such professionals currently needing jobs in the United States?
Is it money?
I mean, I would have to imagine that even when you have a giant athletics budget, all of those dollars are allocated. But I think it's more a question of priorities, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, but I think you could probably go to some boosters and say, hey, look, we want to have these kids on the team. They're very talented. They're great athletes, and we don't want to leave them behind when it comes to the rest of this. So how about if you kick in some money here? How much would it cost for one school, not every college in America, but one big school to hire some people to do exactly what you're saying?
Well, my calculations were $300,000 for 1 year. That's four staff members at $50,000 each, plus their benefits, plus the cost of putting them in some sort of office and allocating some of the office staff to their support. You know, when a large school's athletic budget is $88 million, I guess I have a hard time believing that they can't find $300,000 in that.
Yeah, but you know what? The school doesn't look at it as something that's going to give them any kind of financial return.
And, exactly.
And by the way, some schools are just not... They seem to not care about that, even when you present this sort of proposal, don't they?
To be perfectly honest, I think it varies from school to school.
Yeah.
But yes, I would have to say. When I spent 2 years at Ohio State, and I did have two players from one of its most marquee teams. I can't say because of FERPA rules, but you can extrapolate since you really only have one marquee team. I had two players in my class. Great kids under a lot of pressure, though, and they were just recovering from this major scandal they had with a coach a few years back who openly didn't care about academics. And so their new coach, who can't be named, but all your listeners probably know who it is, was very, very dedicated to repairing their reputation, but largely, you know, because of the scandal that happened before, I'm not sure how dedicated he would have been if that scandal hadn't happened.
Yeah. I've been reading a book called The King of Sports by Greg Easterbrook from ESPN. And in it, he talks about both professional college football players and, I mean, professional players and college football players.
That was an interesting flip that you made, though.
Yeah. Well, they are really professional college football players, and they're treated
and
that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I've argued for years that they should be paid because, you know, people say, well, they're getting an education. But what we're talking about here is that they don't get an education.
Sometimes not.
Yeah. One of the examples that he gives in the book of a guy who does it right is a guy by the name of Frank Beamer, who is the football coach at Virginia Tech and has been there since, I think, the late 80s. And he really puts an emphasis on academics, so much so that when the team leaves the locker room and heads to the field, in the hall going down there are not the pictures of the star players, but there are pictures of the guys with the highest GPA.
Nice.
I like to hear those kind of stories. Why is
I can hear those kind of stories too.
Why is it that if Frank Beamer and other coaches like him can do that at major college football programs, that other schools can't take that same approach? That, you know what? You're here at an educational institution to play football, not at a football institution to fake it in class.
Yeah. I mean, I think the answer comes in the fact that the ad revenue on television doesn't come from the players with the highest GPAs.
Yeah, it all comes down to that bottom line. But as you point out, the bottom line really wouldn't be that expensive. And as I said, I'm sure the boosters would kick in some money to do this sort of thing. Have there been schools? I mean, Beamer is unfortunately an exception. But have there been schools that have gone public with, you know what? You come to our school to play. You're not only going to be on a Division I winning football team. We're going to guarantee that you leave here with a degree that means something.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't understand why more of that isn't done, because there is this aura of we're giving you the best, only the best for you. I mean, I don't want to pick on my hometown. It just happens to be something I know a lot about because I'm from there. But as a lot of sports fans know, the University of Oregon just built this, like, massive Death Star of a training facility for the football team that has, like, imported Brazilian marble and the fanciest massage chairs ever. And so providing them with tutors that had PhDs instead of tutors that didn't even have a VA yet is another way of giving them the best. And if you pitch it that way to the boosters, $50,000. I don't see why they wouldn't write a $50,000 check there and then.
I agree. Rebecca Schumann is an adjunct professor at the University of Missouri in St. Louis and the education columnist for Slate. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
Thank you. It was great to be here.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Networks.